Well, it sounds like it's doing good. What was the model? What model did you say that was, Kenwood?
The Kenwood TM 281A, I think. I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that one. It might be if I pull it up on one of those Google images, but it's not ringing a bell. Well, I'm glad you like it. How old is it?
Buddy, it's pretty new. It's a 65-watt rig. I mean, it's a pretty good little rig. I like it. And I've tried it out on the K9OH repeater. The only way I can hit that repeater now from my house is to use my 13B2 or the other beam. I can't, as far as all directional, I can't get it with all directional.
Yeah, that's a nice compact radio for 100, for, what does it say here? Oh, that's 160 width, not watts. I was thinking it was 160 watts. Did you say it was like 65 watts?
5-watt rig with, it gives you a selection of 100 memory channels or 200 memory channels. It can hold up to 200. I guess that's depending on if you put a long name in or whatever for the repeater. But just for putting in channels, I think it holds 200 channels.
Well, I don't know about you, but I have programmed some, you know, sticking over 100, like 140 repeaters in it. And then over the 14, 15 years I've been a ham radio operator, I probably used 8. That was a lot of work. I don't know. Well, with your traveling, you might use double that or triple that. But I think that's way more memories than you'll ever need.
I don't hardly use too many of them anymore. I mean, I don't know. It's like I tell Steve today and one of the other guys. Kind of got a little burnout on it, you know, and I don't know. I don't know if it's as much burnout as upset, you know. But, I don't know. We had that bad storm come through about a month or so back. I don't know if I told you about it, but, I mean, y'all knowed about it. That it took up most of the power and everything else around here. I didn't have no power at home, and we was really getting hammered over here. And I was trying to report no power outage, you know, to them. That way they knew that on this side of town nobody didn't have power. And, well, I was trying to do everything I could do, you know, to have the radio in the vehicle and crossband through, you know, through the repeater that way. And I was told not to use crossband repeat on the 4-7 repeater, the K9H repeater. So it would cause problems, but I don't know. We had that discussion today, and everybody seems to think if it didn't have the ID tone, you know, in there, which I don't have no ID tone on my radio to any of the repeaters. That way it don't show up who I am, you know what I'm saying? And I was told not to use it, and I don't know, I've kind of backed away from that repeater for the time being until I get time to talk to Billy about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of variables in there. If you use crossband repeat, and you focus on when you have to, how you keep it legal. And there's several different methods of crossband repeat, and there's several different qualities of crossband repeat. Some crossband repeat radios, they go real quick, and they're almost instantaneous, and you can't even tell you're using crossband repeat. And for those, you could use crossband repeat all you want, and they would never know it. Because the ID has to happen on both frequencies in both directions. When you keep, you are responsible for the frequency that you're operating on and any remote station that you're operating for IDing every 10 minutes. Well, when you ID on your handheld and it goes over to your mobile rig, then you're IDing on 70 centimeters from your handheld to your mobile rig at milliwatts, right? It doesn't need to be a whole watt. And nobody's going to hear that unless they're standing right next to you with a another handheld on 70 centimeters. And then when it goes up to the repeater, that's your ID. Everybody has to do that once every 10 minutes. And then coming back in the reverse direction, when the repeater is talking and you're listening from your truck on 2 meters, that gets crossed over to 70 centimeters, and that link, that 70 centimeter link, needs the ID. Not any link that's going up to the repeater, right? The link that's coming back to you, to your handheld, because you are transmitting on 70 centimeters from your truck to your handheld, and that has the ID, not the one that has to send the CW ID, not the one going up to the repeater. So the reason they say that, most likely, is because people get that all mixed up and confused, and they get it backwards, and they start sending IDs up there, and double IDs and triple IDs, and they get tired of it, and they don't want to explain it all to you, so they just tell you, don't use it, right? But the bottom line is, if you do it the right way, and you're legal on every hop, they won't even know you're using crossband repeat, and you can use it all you want.
It's on low power, right? You got to have the walkie-talkie on 1 watt, or whatever the low power is on the walkie-talkie. I think mine's 1 watt, and I think high power it is 5 watt. But you got to have, on the 70-centimeter side, you got to be low power on the 70-centimeter set, so you don't be putting 50 watts into the VHF side of your radio. And you can be coming out the other side on medium, and they shouldn't be nothing to interfere, right? Am I correct on that?
That's affirmative. So it's not so much that they don't want you crossband repeating. They just don't want people that are doing it wrong to be using it and be on the repeater at the same time. And instead of taking the time to explain it to you, they're just telling you don't use crossband repeat. Because you can use it. I use it around the house all the time. I'm out in the yard. It crossbands to my base station. Base station talks to somebody, and they don't even know I'm on crossband repeat. They don't need to know. Everything on 70-centimeter side is low power, as low as you can go. And then the only high power that's going out, if you're even using high power, is the 2 meters that goes up to the repeater. That's the only jump that uses any wattage. Everything else is minimal. And if you do it wrong, you're gonna and they don't want that IDing coming out the 2 meter side, and you're IDing multiple times out the 2 meter side, yeah, you're gonna upset them after a while.
That's what I've always thought. I mean, by reading the book and reading everything that I have read, you know, since I've started in this, that's kind of what I came up with too. But instead, in an emergency situation, you should be able to use the crossband repeat when you don't have no other way to communicate, right?
W4DJW. When it's a life-threatening or property-damaging emergency situation, you can run a spark jet generator on all bands at the same time at whatever power you need. You can flood everything. In an emergency situation, it doesn't matter. You use what you've got.
Well, that's what I was thinking. That's kind of what I read, you know, when I studied up for all this test and stuff. I mean, it's not rocket science. You know what I'm saying? But I don't know. I think I took a swift kick between the legs 2 times off of that repeater, and I don't know. It's just like tonight. I could have cared less if the hail would have tore down the interstate tonight. I was not going to report it. You know, I mean, I don't
know. I've about had enough of it. Well, I'd take the context into consideration before letting it upset me, right? If it's somebody who's had a bad day and it's not somebody who Billy would want doing that kind of thing, and you got to take everything into context. I wouldn't let it bother me at all, though. I'd go on about it. I wouldn't think two thoughts about it. If you're using crossband repeat right, they won't ever know you're doing it.
Roger. Hang on just a second. Let me come right back to KN4UBG. I'll be on standby just for a second.
Okay. W4DJW, standing by.
N4DJC.
Hey, Jerry.
I was having a conversation with Steve and Kevin this afternoon about how the repeater IDs get people confused. A lot of these guys when they hit those late repeaters, they broadcast that link all over here, and that repeater's ID and everywhere, and I don't think I'd be clear about how I explained it to them. I said, but it's a little different, and Kenwood does a crossband repeat a little different where they ID theirs. It's just kind of oddball sometimes. Anyway, I thought I'd interject that.
Yeah, that is another thing. Some of them are slow, and if you ask people to slow down because of your crossband repeat, that could, that's another thing. Some crossband repeats, you say, you keyed up too fast and I couldn't talk. And they've already got, they're dealing with enough delays as it is. And I've had a crossband repeat that was slow like that. And I know people got frustrated when I was using it. But then when I switched over to Yaesu's, I didn't have any more problem with, and Johnny uses ICOM. And he's crossband repeating most of the time. And nobody even knows it.
That's what I got. I got the crossband repeat I have set up is an ICOM 2730A. I try to do it legally. I mean, that's what I try to do legally. I mean, the only time that I ever turn the wattage up on the radio, on the handheld, is if I'm more than a mile away from my house.
And that doesn't matter. That's on a different band. You could run 50 watts on that if you needed to get back to your house. That's not an issue. You can cross band from a mobile rig to your house on 50 watts on UHF to your base station, who could be transmitting 50 watts up to the repeater on 2 meters. That's perfectly legal. You use no more than the power that it takes to complete your transmission successfully. It's not 2 watts or 1 watt. I just like using the minimal wattage necessary just to see if I can. W4DJW.
I mean, maybe I just need to talk to Billy about it and find out what he meant about it, but he was the one who told me not to use crossband repeat. But it was an emergency situation, and, you don't have no TV. I didn't have no TV, no radios, no nothing. I mean, that was the only thing I was relying on. It didn't even have a way to pull up anything other than a cell phone, and that thing was about half dead. So, you know what I'm saying? I mean, other than telling or asking me a simple question, I don't know. I mean, maybe I took it the wrong way. I mean, I don't know. But I just kindly pulled off of that one. I listen to it every once in a while, but I ain't keyed up, making sense since they told me that.
Well, I found out when I got on HF radio. HF, let me make sure I got it here. Yeah, when I first started using HF radio, I kind of ran into that a good bit. And you learn to build up a thick skin to that kind of thing. Don't let that bother you, right? That's just one person. There's millions of people out there that are doing, and that person could have just been having a bad day, right? It could have been he had to deal with 5 or 6 people that didn't, that were IDing way too often. And like Jerry was saying, those things have to relay all of that information. And after a while, it could have just been frustrating to him too, especially if somebody gets it backwards and they send the Morse code ID out the 2 meter side. When you ID in 70 centimeters, you're IDing on two frequencies, your UHF and your VHF at the same time. And that's legal. So the jump from you to the repeater, both of your frequencies are covered. You don't need a CWID there at all. You need the CWID when the repeater comes back to your remote rig and your remote rig transmits, right? That rig is responsible for IDing too, and you're not over there coming back to you to identify that on that radio. So that one has to have a CWID, and that's the only one. And he should never hear that one because that's just between you, your handheld, and your mobile rig. That's not between your mobile rig and the repeater.
Right.
Go ahead, Johnny.
I was here on crossband repeat, something that I love to use and don't have any trouble with. And I might have been partly responsible for recommending that he get on and use it.
And there's nothing wrong with it as long as you don't ID more often than you need to, especially on a linked up system like that. And your ID, your one time every 10 minutes going out of UHF, going out of VHF, is all you need, is all the repeater ever needs to hear once every 10 minutes.
Right.
And do you know when Johnny's on Crossband repeat? No, I don't either. Sometimes I think he's got a really good signal for that little mic that's strapped to his shoulder.
Well, question. As far as to find out if my radio is putting out an actual whatever it is to identify itself, I mean, how would you figure that out? I mean, is that something that you can tune into the 4-7 repeater in here? Or is that something you can tell by the repeater feeding back to me that you can hear?
That comes out on the frequency that your handheld is listening to. That comes out on the UHF, the 70 centimeter side. When those people are talking back to you from the repeater goes from the repeater to your mobile rig on 2 meters. And then your mobile rig converts that to 70 centimeters and sends it to your handheld. So you're hearing what those other people are saying, and every now and then, on top of or underneath of them, you're going to hear your mobile rig identifying itself to your handheld on the same frequency the other people on the repeater are talking on, coming to you from your truck to you, not coming from the repeater to your truck. Does that make sense?
Well, I was kind of wondering how that worked, but that's, even if it did that, there's no way for them to know that I'm still on crossband repeat, right?
Right, the human being is taking care of the 2 meter and the 70 centimeter identification every 10 minutes from everything you're transmitting from. The only thing that's being transmitted by the radio is the radio in the truck. Its signal back to your handheld has to identify once every 10 minutes not over there at the truck to squeeze its mic and throw your call sign out, so it has to send a CW ID out. And you'll hear it on the same frequency you're listening to the repeater on your handheld. And that's all you need, and you're legal. Every 10 minutes, whatever you're responsible for transmitting, you're responsible for identification every 10 minutes. And that truck is relaying that signal back to your handheld, so you're responsible for that hop, too.
That's kind of the way I was figuring it, but it don't look like that would interfere with them. That would look like that would interfere with me in case of somebody say my radio identified itself to my handheld while somebody was talking. That would be the only way that it would interfere with anything, which would not repeat itself back through my handheld and go back to the repeater and know me. It might just be hard for me to hear something, just like at times when people key up on here and you can hear the repeater identify itself in the background when somebody's talking.
You got it. That is precisely correct. Right? Every now and then, you're going to hear your mobile rig identify itself on your handheld while somebody else is talking, or they may not be talking. It may be dead air, and you just hear it identify itself. W4DJW, keeping it legal.
4EST.
Hey, there's Shannon. I haven't heard you in years. Where you been, Shannon?
Long. I don't know. I'm so busy. I hardly have time to get on the radio. But I was wondering if he would like the number to call Skywarn, the Skywarn number himself. So, you know, like if he wants to report something, he can just call it on his phone to report, like hail, that any size hail they want you to report.
I'm thinking Johnny or Jerry, either one of them would know it. Johnny, go ahead, and if you don't know it, pass it to Jerry. Oh, okay. Well, you can give that to... Well, I think what Kevin was wanting to do was... He was in a bad spot, and he was wanting to know what was going on in his area, I think.
That was kind of the situation, but I got forced into hooking a jump-starting box to a $400 radio that I didn't really know if it was going to work like that or not, and I thought I messed up my radio. So that's kind of why that I was kind of in the upset stage.
10-9 OYL.
Is that Jim?
Yeah, I haven't been on here for a while either. I would like that phone number. I do not have a rig in my work vehicle, and there are times I would be able to report things. So if give me just a half second to lay the mic down, I would love to copy that number.
Standing by. 800 268 268-7785.
800-268-7785. I'll definitely put that in my phone.
You tell them that you're a ham. I'm not sure if you have to go through the Skywarn training or not. I have, but the way it is once you go through Skywarn training is they'll have your call sign, and when you call them, you tell them your call sign, and then they'll know your location. So I don't know if you tell them that you're a ham. See what happens. If they might put your location down. I don't know if you have to take the training or not. Sam for you, Steve.
And, yeah, I've been Skywarn trained, but it's been a number of years. But anyway, I have a quick little story from 25, 30 years ago up in Indiana when we had an emergency situation, if you want to hear it real quick.
I got some stories, too, but I want to, you know, interrupt what they were talking about. Sam, for you, Yucky.
Go ahead. I'm good. If Dave's good.
I'm good. Go right ahead, W4DJW. Standing by and listening.
Yeah, like I say, it's been close to 30 years or more, maybe. I don't know. I've been here 20-something, so, yeah. Anyhow, we had a small tornado that passed about 20 miles north of my hometown of Logansport, Indiana, years ago. And a young man, about 12 years old, was not a ham radio operator. His father was. Their house was actually hit, and he and his older brother were at home. Mom and dad were out at dinner or whatever. I don't know. They were out, and there were no communications other than he got in dad's pickup and was able to get on the 2-meter rig that was in there and get up a report and get emergency services headed their way. And somebody at the time questioned it, and it was very immediately said, nope, perfectly legal.
Yeah, that's true, Jim. If it's an emergency, if life or property are at stake, it says it in the Part 97 of the rules, use what you have. Do, and whoever you are, use what you've got to save lives.
And I've told Sherry, I've told a lot of people that I would have no problem grabbing the mic in a police car if officer was down or whatever. Not a bit.
Now look at, I mean, do it first, ask for forgiveness later. That's always been my motto. KN4UBG.
For DJC Friday, I got a quick one too if anybody wants to listen.
I do, W4DJW.
Hugo was coming through. I worked in Fort Mill. I worked for Springs Industries at the time. Of course, I've been a ham since late 70s. And we didn't have anything. The phone lines were out, everything. It came through the engine store area. I mean, it was really bad up in that area. I was farm manager had about 350 people working for me at the time, and I made them stay in the plant that evening. It went through, came through about 4 in the morning. They wanted to leave, and I said, don't leave. And so I only lived about a mile and a half away. So I went down there. Of course, we had a big generator. We had probably a 50,000-watt generator that diesel that cranked up, plus other emergency stuff, too. So I took mine out of had a Kenwood 7950, an old mobile rig I had in my truck. Took it down there, and I got them to put up a mag. I got one of my mag mounts I had on as high up as they could get it. And that's how, since I was a Brace member, Aries member, and Civil Defense too, we were going back and forth, and all everything was out for a long time. And the only way I could get in touch with my plant manager in Lancaster was to use an illegal auto patch to call long distance to call it through the auto patch and the K4YTZ repeater.
So what was the outcome? Did you did it pass over? Was everybody safe?
And I didn't have a very big yard. There were 22 trees down in my yard, just cleared out everything else. Especially, it got up to about 110, 115 miles an hour, but there wasn't any, mostly tree damage. But I didn't want those people leaving. I mean, when they walked out of the parking lot, we had about seven or eight cars, and the parking lot had been crushed. It was having the building was a single-story building. It had been built years ago, but it was all, concrete and reinforced with I-beams, and we lost a little bit of little bit of 10 here and there, but that was about it. But it was an interesting situation, though, because we were, you know, I had a good ass. We had this little thing, 4 minutes to a tiny little town, and I went down to the, I was a liaison since I was the only one, only member of management that could get in and out of there since I only lived a mile from the plant. I just walked back and forth for about 10 days, I guess, but we got everybody out fine. And, but it was an interesting situation that I had to, they were concerned about running out of water. So the mayor told, he said, what do you think you ought to do? And I said, well, just tell them the water's bad. He said, what? I said, yeah, tell them the water needs to be boiled. Of course, it might have been anyway, but, you know, they only had so much water, and they had a water tower, they only had so much water. It'd been about 8 days then. He said, I'm probably going to run out of water. I told him, I said, well, just lie to them, I guess. That's the only way to do it. He didn't do that, but they all, everybody that counseled me just busted out laughing. I said, well, that's a distant solution to a problem. I said, well, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. You don't want to run out of water and have people in big trouble. I said, just tell them to boil it all.
There you go. I remember, Hugo, that was a bad one. I was overseas, and when I got back here, it really messed up a lot of stuff. Charlotte was, a lot of their trees that had been standing for over 100 years were down. I mean, it wiped out trees all over the place. That was a bad one. I remember that. W4DJW.
Hugo was a nasty thing.
So, Jim, do you miss Logansport? I spent 2 years of my life in Logansport.
I miss some of my buddies and stuff, but not much else.
I miss riding my bicycle in the middle of the winter, peddling newspapers, and I've snowed like 3-4 feet thick all around, and being the most miserable I ever was. But in the summertime, it was fun fishing on the Wabash River.
What years were you in Logan?
I'd have to really think to figure that out. It was probably in the 60s, sometime in the 60s, probably around 65, 66.
I was born in 62, so, that's neat. We lived out on the boulevard on Broadway, about a block short of the end of it, out there where the park, Spencer Park and the fairgrounds were.
So did you ever go across the where the Wabash River splits and then comes back together, the two bridges that you have to go across and on that island that it forms in between?
Island.
So if you're going toward Logansport and you look to the right on Biddle's Island, you would have seen a house on the left and a house on the right down the street. I lived in the house on the right.
Okay, I know exactly where you're talking about. Nobody else probably does on here, but I do, and I know I am.
Those were fun times. That's where I learned to put a quarter or a nickel or a penny on the railroad track and come back and pick it up, and it'd be as big around as a silver dollar or bigger.
Well, that was an interesting little spot there because nobody else knows this, but you'd cross a bridge out onto the island, and then you would dip down and go under a railroad overpass, and then you'd climb back up and go over a bridge on the other side of the island onto the other side.
I rode my bicycle across those bridges many, many times. Anyway, sharing old memories, different point in time. Shannon says she had some stories, too. Let's hear them, Shannon, W4DJW.
I'll out here just in case I don't get on again. I'll be listening, though.
Can you still hear me on this little handheld?
It's got some white noise, but we can hear you.
Back to the other radio, but I hadn't tried this in a long time because this one still works okay. It got different. She tried super fake antenna on it, and I used to have one of those Royals, and this is like a MSJ, I think.
Well, it's making it in. It's just got some white noise. You got it on the, is it on a rubber duck, or you got it on one of those external antennas?
It's a longer width antenna, but it's, from what I understand, it's a fake Gloria.
Okay. Well, your other one did a whole lot better than that, and you've got enough antennas experimenting with the simplex net. You're making the repeater really good.
I just want to see if that works still. Now that I'm back trying to get on the radio again, I'm trying to sort of test everything. I was assuming that my long wire worked, and something's wrong with it, so I got an infed. I'm going to try infed. But my story doesn't have a radio in it, though. But I've been in a lot of close to tornadoes, but not in the middle of one. I just dropped there a minute. I was in Illinois. My parents lived in Illinois for a while. I can't remember exactly when it was. I think it was the early 90s. But anyway, there's this. I was sitting in the kitchen, and the lights went. The sky went dark, and the lights went out. And I ran and I looked out. I ran and got in the closet. Hey, I had that much time. You know, I could see seconds. Ran, got in the closet, in the bathroom closet, and all of a sudden, hear the windows break, and they were breaking. This time, thankfully, just on one side of the house. And every once in a while, I'd peek out of the bathroom closet door, and I'd peek out that window right there, and there was limbs flying by. And the windows were breaking, and limbs were flying by, and then all of a sudden, it was over. And I, so I ran outside, and the ditches were filled with green snakes. This was a flat, flat place, you know, there was all these green snakes everywhere, and but later the storm turned into a tornado. I guess it was that point of the hailstorm. It turned into a tornado because we went out, but everybody does up there in that area, you know, in Illinois, I'm sure everybody does. They go out looking to see what happened, and, you know, we went and we saw everything twisted around and on those, you know, back roads and everything. We just went and saw what it did. Cam 4EFT.
What was that you said that was laying on the ground? Green snakes?
I've never seen that since. Of course, I haven't been in a storm just like that either, but okay, this is a funny part. I'd never seen green snakes there ever, you know, and then all of a sudden after this hailstorm out there in the ditches were filled with green snakes. I don't know. I've never seen one there ever before or after. But what that storm did to, it totaled some trailers that were there in the area, in that little town. It was only a couple blocks of the town. It was very small. And it broke all the windows on one side of all the houses. And it broke the windshields out of cars. I didn't have a car. My parents weren't home, so I was there by myself. Cam 4EFT.
Well, I've read, let me see if I got it. Yeah, I've read where snakes were able to go from one island to another by being carried by the storm. They'd get swept up by the storm and float, not really float, but, you know, in a crazy, like, tornado or something like that, get carried up really high in the sky and land on a different island. That's how they would get from one island to another. So I guess they can do that across land, too. That's pretty weird. W4DJW.
I had to leave that little town for another one that was more exciting or something.
Well, that's closer than I've ever been to one. I've had family members that went through it, and they said it sounded like a train, where they'd never heard a train before. It sounded like a train coming. My uncle and my grandfather went through two of them where, and one of them, the house was lifted up off the ground, and they fell out the bottom of the house. And my grandfather said he everything was like in slow motion. When he hit the ground, it shattered one leg, and he said, well, at least I got one good leg left, and then it shattered the other leg, and it messed up both of his legs. I think he was in a wheelchair from that point forward. W4DJW.
I'm lucky because I have been so close to other storms, too, like when I was 7, and that kind of fear comes back. I still have this, you know, I don't have that much now, but anyway, when I was 7, that's the only time I heard the freight train noise, even though I've been so close to it. Or actually, you know, like, I was in the one in West Asheville, gosh, that's been almost 20 years ago now, but it hit 80 Tech. But I didn't know it. I mean, I knew to run and get in the closet, but it was another example of where the lights went out. But the lights went out, it was before dawn. But I still run and got in the closet because I guess the rain sounded a certain way or whatever. And the tornado did touch down in my, across in my neighbor's yard, and I didn't even know it. So you can be really close to them and not know it if it doesn't hit your house, because, you know, it kind of touched down. And like when I was 7, that one that happened, it was the only time I heard the freight train noise. It dumped, we were at someone else's house and visiting, and it dumped the chimney off the house onto somebody's car on the, across the street from us, where we were at. KM4EFT.
Well, I think we heard that in Seneca as well. It hit one house, move or go around the next house, and hit the other house on the other side of it. And I heard the same thing 30 years ago from where stories of my relatives telling about how they pick out houses, zigzag across the street and knock one every other house out, right? It's just a, you know, sheer luck that it didn't hit your house, or bad luck that it does. W4DJW, you got other guys in there, jump in there.
WBG, what was her call sign?
Kilo Mike 4 Echo Foxtrot Tango.
I thought it was something else. That's why it's pulling up wrong. I'm pulling up Johnny something from Georgia. Well, I'm gonna say 73s to everybody out there, and I think you answered my question there, Dave. And you know, next time I just won't pay it no attention. But I'll say good night to all y'all out there. You have a good one, and we'll holler at y'all a little bit later on. KN4UBG, I'll be clear on y'all's final.
All right, Kevin, water off a duck's back. Let it roll on. Good talking to you, and I'm going to pack it up, too. I got to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to do some work for work, so I got to get something to eat and rest a little bit. W4DJW, I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, Kevin, you have a good one, buddy. You'll like that Kenwood Radio. They do. They have great audio and have good receivers. I know you'll enjoy it. And I'm glad everything worked out on the crossband repeat. It is kind of an oddball thing. I would pay a bit of attention to it. Use it the way you want to use it. But anyway, you guys have a good evening. And the ladies as well. And we'll talk to you later. And for NJ Sinclair.
Wow.
Still there. I meant to say that I really like Kenwoods. I've got a couple of used Kenwoods. Both of them are 2-meter sideband radios. So, and I like them a lot. I like the sound quality on Kenwoods. Good night, y'all. It was great talking with you, to y'all and everything. And have a great night. KM4EFT.
Yeah, I think I'm going to like this Kenwood. This Kenwood's a pretty good little radio. It seems to have pretty good receive on it and all that. Everybody sounds real good on it. And I think if I ever run across another one, I might get me another one. Can't beat it for $90. I just had to drive to Georgia to pick it up. But it's a real good radio. I like it. And I'd like to get me one that's got the sideband mode in it, but I'll say 73s, and y'all have a good one.
I got a good deal on this Kenwood. It's sideband 2-meter 440 sideband, and it's got FM on it too, but it doesn't have tones in it. It's old enough to not have tones, so. But you can switch. Use a repeater that doesn't have tones. It's just got a button that has an offset on it, the plus and minus. It's pretty neat. I like it. It's fun. But if you ever get a sideband radio, I'll have to try talking to you. You know, I got a beam and everything, so I can talk to somebody down there. Me and Dave talked before. Came for Yessie.
Models that Kenwood sideband rig you got. It's hard to find 2-meter 440 sideband without spending a bunch of money these days.
TS, looking at it, TS 780. I've got two of them. The other ones I've got in a box in there. It's a mobile radio. It needs a memory battery in it. You know, a 9-volt, but it's got to be an iCAD, so I haven't used it for a while. 10-4-SD.
It's a good rig. I ran 2-meter sideband back in the early 80s and really enjoyed it, but you do have to have a decent beam up or two in order to be able to make any contact or anything, but I always look for those openings though, and worked all up down the East Coast most of the, for about a year or so, then I moved and didn't put up another antenna up since then. That's been almost 40 years ago, I guess.
I've got a little Guelo, and then I've got a beam, but I have to turn the beam myself, but I used to check in and out. I just have been away from the AM radio for pretty much a year. Dave says 2 years. I don't know how long it's been exactly, but I'm doing all this gardening and stuff, and I've got chickens and ducks, and I just stay so busy, I don't get on very much, but if people want to talk on 2-meter sideband, I'm willing to try it, because I think it's pretty fun.
Just that weak signal work is a lot of fun, and I know I always enjoyed it. I didn't get a lot done on 432, but on 2 meters, I really enjoyed it. We had a net just about every night. I'd work up into, I lived up near Charlotte, and I could work up into Delaware and Maryland and follow the coastal, mainly kind of up and down the coast. I couldn't get in inland very well, but it was that, when that tropo duct opened up, man, you could really work some good stations for a long time. We had a real, a real serious ham in Fort Mill in Rock Hill. He's still up there, but he had an EME outfit though. They could, he worked DXCC on EME. I think he did it one time. I know he worked all states on it at one time. But he had eight 2-meter beams mounted with an azimuth elevation set up. But I don't know whether he's still active anymore.
Two beams. You meant stacked together, right? So yeah, like eight of them together. Am I understand you right?
Yeah, he had eight. I think it was 8-beam array, and it was mounted. He was, he had plenty of money. He also had a 150-foot tower, but he didn't mount that up that high. He had it kind of low, but he had a big place there right there on the Catawba River. And named Rick Porter, AA4SC. I hadn't talked to him in years, but he was real active on HF all bands. But he got interested in 2-meter moon bounce stuff years ago. And I don't know how many. He might have worked in the XCC. He's worked a bunch of countries. I know that. But he's been working on that for 35, 40 years. He used to be a guy over in Spartanburg too. Called N4DT, and he had a moon bounce rig too. That's been years ago. I don't know whether he's still active or not either.
I'm familiar, but I'm not sure. That's pretty neat. I'm just amazed that I really hadn't thought that that much. But I was amazed at how I could talk to somebody further away or just as far as people talk on repeaters without that much power.
I normally didn't run but about 10 watts. I had a amp that I'd turn on every once in a while. I had a 160 watt amp I had at one time, but I hardly ever ran it because I lived in an apartment then. I had a F9 FT 9-element beam up with a rotor, and it was up about 45 or 50 feet, but I was sitting up kind of high on the hill, so I could work stations pretty easy. But I'm right here almost on Lake Orwell right now, and it's really, I got a lot of vegetation around me. Putting some on the roof now wouldn't be beneficial to me.
Location here, I'm at 2,200 feet on top of the hill. So I do pretty well. I have one of those 160 watt amps too.
we had a Mirage, because one of my buddies had one in his car. He was running on his FM rig, and I think it was a Mirage that I had. He had 160, 180, and had a 160. And I also had one of those, I can't remember the brand name now, but it was very popular. I also had a preamp that I used too, and you could switch that preamp on. It made a big difference on some of the weak signals. But I really enjoyed it when I first moved here back in 92, and I lived in a different house, and I was right on top of the hill. I mean, I could hit the repeater in Anderson on half a watt and be full quieting in it, and I could see the fairgrounds from my house. And if I'd stay there more, I didn't stay there for about a year, maybe 2 years, I guess. If I'd stay there long enough, I probably put a tower up, but I probably could have put a beam up on the roof. But where I'm at now, I've been working, trying to do some, just talking on the business, trying to do a little satellite work every once in a while if I get a good pass over.
So do you still have your
two-meter
sideband equipment, like that radio that I have?
No, I don't. I sold that thing years ago. I had there's a guy here in town that's got one, but he wouldn't take love to move. I had an Icom 251A, and it was a good rig. I really enjoyed that. But like I said, it was only 10 watts, but it had a pretty good receiver in it. And you know, the 10 watts, you didn't have to worry. It had a power supply built in. So on the home rig, you had to use an external power supply for the amp. And I'm thinking that Mirage that I had a built-in, I think it had an amp, it was like an integrated amp that you could buy along with it too, because it was about a 30 amp power supply that went along with it. But I used it for a long time, but like I said, I didn't need it. Most times 10 watts, I could work pretty well on 10 watts. But I like that Icom, but the Kenwood, I think all the Kenwoods have got better receivers than any of the Icoms. But they, well, back in those days anyway, I know they did. I think that Kenwood you got is probably about as good receiver as any of them have.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to try it out more. I'm thinking I'll have time, but I don't really know if we'll not. Came for you, Steve.
Happy Friday. I know what that is. I'm retired now, but I don't have as much time as I thought I did. But I'd like to get another 2 meter sideband ring, but they're hard to find. People don't get rid of them. They're hard to find and good something workable, in good condition, and they just don't. They're starting to make a few now, but the ones they're making now, it just Icon's got a tri-band rig. It's a 440 and 2 meter and 1296, I think. And it's that thing's about $1,400 to $1,500 and. Icon, they make coming out with a QRP rig, but it's not going to run about 10 watts. But it's going to be probably $1,200 to $1,300, but it's hard to find. I mean, Kenwood didn't make it. They don't make anything, I don't believe, since they discontinued the 2000 HF rig that had all the bands on it. I don't think Kenwood makes anything. That covers 2 and 440 on sideband anymore. I don't think so, anyway.
That 2 meter sideband is, I know it's not going to sound good as a camera, but the 857D, you know, the HF rig, it's got 2 meter sideband on it. You probably knew that, though.
That one, it does. And another one that does, I was just thinking back, I was talking to a guy, Steve, I can't remember Steve's call, but he's got a Jesu 991 that's got 2 and 440 sideband on it, and it's not too expensive. But like I said, I like the Icons and the Kenwoods for 2 meters, and I remember when I was telling somebody this the other day, one of my buddies here in Anderson's got a Icom 251A, and the guy got me started ham radio up in Fort Mill. He was he'd been a ham for years, and he saw my 251 I had to get him one, and he bought one. I think he kept that. He passed away some years ago, but I think he kept that thing until he couldn't operate anymore. But he loved that little Icom.
Hey. if we have HamFest again or whatever, I got both the ones I got at HamFest. This one that I was telling you about, I got Spartanburg HamFest. And the other one I got is the Asheville one, but the one I got in Asheville, I paid probably too much money for it, but it's all right, but I didn't get as good a deal on that one as I did on the bait.
You know, hard to, the bubbles are hard to, I don't think they made too many mobile sideband rigs. I don't remember. I mean, it's been years since I've been looking for one, but I really just got back into ham radio about a year ago with some of those other things going on, and I just didn't, and even now, I'm just working inside, and I got a little 5-element beam sitting inside the upstairs bedroom up here and using it, and I don't have anything mounted outside. And because of the way the QTH is, but I can run it vertical. I'm running it vertical now, and I'm running about 5 watts. And like I said, it works good for what it is. But this is a Kenwood D710. It's really run 50. I used to run 5 or 10 on it because it doesn't really need it to get into the repeater. I just wish I could find somebody to run 10 or 15 watts, or maybe 25 watts. Maybe one of these days somebody will come back out with something as reasonable as a 2-meter sideband rig or a 4M. Because, Icon made several of them, but none of them were all together until later on. They're all separate rigs.
There's Icon had their
Spartanburg
HamFest at the same time Spartanburg had their Kenwood did. I really don't know the history on them as much.
They made some, combination rigs. They had 240 of them together, but they haven't made them in a number of years, and they were real popular. They didn't, they came out with some of the small, little portable radios that were like a backpack type radio. Those had some of their, Yaesu made some, and ICOM did too. They had 240 on them, but They had batteries in them and that sort of thing. It really wasn't set up to be a rig you could use at the house. It was really small. But yeah, they made them, and Kenwood, of course Kenwood did too. But the Icons that I had two of them. I had a 440 version and a 2-meter version, and my brother-in-law had a 6-meter version of that same 251. I think that was 251. 451 and 551. It was a 2-440 and a 6-meter all mode rig.
6-meter, I just have a 6-meter FM antenna. And I talked on sideband before, but I have this little heat kit 6-meter AM, and it almost talks on the call frequency. It's a little off, but I just like the way those sound. Those are on that little AM, that little AM heat kit. It sounds really good.
I had a big vertical HF antenna in Rock Hill, and I'd get late at night, I'd get on AM on HF bands, and I tell you, nothing sounds like AM. It really does sound good. You just don't see many people on it because it's such a way, it takes so much bandwidth now, but it was like talking to somebody on the phone. It was so clear. And I really enjoyed it. I remember my wife used to come in and say, you don't sound like Donald Duck. These folks don't sound like Donald Duck like you do on sideband. So AM was just a great, this is a great, great mode, but it just takes too much bandwidth now, I guess, for people to enjoy it. But I really enjoyed it.
That's saying for you. See, I've heard people talk about that, but sometimes when I've listened on 75 meters, hear some older fellas talking about that. But I guess people don't do it anymore. They don't have AM for that anymore, right?
See, I don't know whether I had a Kenwood or a Yaesu. It might have been a Kenwood 8. Might have been a 520 or 530. And I think I had a Yaesu 101. One of them had AM years ago. And I'd get a 20-meter AM. Man, it was really, when the band was wide open back in the early 80s, you didn't have to run any power at all. You could talk to just about anybody, And as soon as the sun went down, and I talked to him, I remember using I appreciate using on 20 meters, but it might have been 40 meters, but the band was wide open in those days, and it was easy to talk to. You know, when the sun started going out, I talked to people on the West Coast and all over the place, and on AM. It's not, I don't think it's as efficient as sideband for working DX, but it was good for working in the United States anyway. I doubt they even make a radio that's got AM on it anymore.